You are now listening to Ride With Me, the Flat Tyranny Podcast.
Welcome to Ride With Me, episode 89. Today is February 25, 2023. And today's guest, actually, before I introduce her, what caught my attention for my guest is her TikTok videos and the love that she has for the Dallas Cowboys. My guest, Marlena.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm honored and humbled to be able to share my story with you. Thank you so much. And of course, you know, I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, have been my entire existence. That's kind of all I know is the Dallas Cowboys. So thank you so much.
I was telling my boys, I was like, dude, this lady is like, I love the Cowboys. I showed you my stuff before we started recording. But you actually pay attention to who's the coaches are, who's going to get fired, who's going to come in, you know, who's going to let go and stuff like that. And I was like, I just watch, you know, you actually follow all year long. I don't, it's funny because I just mentioned to my wife the other day, I'm like, be happy that I only follow one sport. You know, I don't follow baseball, soccer, basketball. I don't sit in front of the TV for 3 hours a day to watch a different sport. It's just football because they hate football Sundays because a family doesn't exist on Sundays.
Oh my gosh. For me, it's like quite the opposite. As I do the most I can during the week if I know during football season, because every Sunday my kids, my husband and my kids are like, okay, mom's going to be in there watching the games. So like, it's not just about the Cowboys. If there's a game on Sunday or Thursday or Monday, I'm watching those games. It's just something that's kind of been embedded in me, being raised in a small town. So like, that's just Friday Night Lights. That's who we are.
On Sundays, if the Cowboy game is on at, what, 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
We'll miss Mass. Sorry. Or we'll go to Mass earlier or later.
I make a horrible joke and my grandma would not like it. I always say football. Hey, Sundays are my church. And I'm like, like all the games. Like, that's my sermon. I'm always like, Jimmy Johnson preaches, and, you know, they're all out there giving a sermon.
Yeah, no, I love your videos. I just, like, you can be talking about the weather, and then it leads to the Cowboys. So, like I said, you're more of a, even though your background right now is a Dallas Cowboy flag. So, you're more a Cowboy fan than I am. You take the torch.
I'll take it gladly.
So let's get to know Marlena. You are obviously from Texas.
Yes, born and raised.
How is it in Texas? I mean, I've never been to the Cowboy Stadium. I'm sure you have multiple times.
Oh my God, it's massive. And Mrs. Jerry Jones, she's got it impeccable. It's immaculate. It's like an art gallery when you go up in there. I haven't had the pleasure of taking any other tours. I should, but because I'm a diehard fan, I feel like that's kind of like I would jinx everything.
I say the same thing about making bets. So I made a bet 1 year. Same here. I made a bet 1 year, and Tony Romo broke his collarbone. Never again.
Oh, yeah. I also have a thing, like, I'm so superstitious. So it's like, if I'm like the Home Depot or Lowe's and like some guy goes like, hey man, I like your hat, I will chase that person down and give them my hat, because if you compliment it, I have to give it to you, because it's like super, like, I'm like, I have to, especially like on game days, like if somebody's like complimenting my gear, and especially if it's like a hat, because I don't buy my own gear, and so it sounds weird because I'm also superstitious with it, but I'll give it away. Like, don't compliment it because I'm going to give it away. My husband's like, dude, you got to take her hat, because like the Cowboys are, in fact, the first game this year, that happened with my pink Cowboys hat. I was like, oh, man. It's like, you had to take pink Cowboys hat.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, I'm superstitious when it comes to making bets. And then when my cousin's talking papas on Facebook, my kids are like, do not respond, Dad. Do not respond. You jinx us when you respond. So, but besides the Cowboys, I mean, you're a mom, right?
Yeah. I have two kids. My oldest is about to have a birthday coming up. He's about to be 14. He's like going on 18 though. He's like, he's my world. He's a bodybuilder. He plays jazz music. He's a saxophone player. So he's pretty cool. My daughter, I always tell them she's my favorite son. That's my favorite daughter.
Wow.
I have one of each.
Yeah. My son, he's 14. He's my youngest. And he just turned 14 also. And he plays Fortnite, that's his thing. or get under my skin. That's his thing. And yeah, I always tell him he's my favorite baby, you know. Like, and he's like, Dad, I am the baby.
Yeah, yeah. And then my daughter, I always tell her she's my favorite. She's my creative genius. She's like a mathematician, and she's all the arts, everything. She's that girl's a whiz. She's Einstein to shame.
No, yeah, these boys. Like I said, Julian, he's 14. He just turned 14. He's in GATE. He's good grades. Nick, he's in high school, 10th grade. He likes to he's into photography now, and he loves his grades are straight A's, so I think my wife is doing a good job, because I'm giving her all the credit.
Amen. It's good to hear you. It's good. Does she stay home? Does your wife stay home?
So when I first got custody of these kids, she pretty much ended up finishing her job, not finishing school, and she stayed home to be a stay-at-home mom.
And I love it. That's amazing. I love that. That's what I do.
Yeah, you're a stay-at-home mom? Yeah. I repeated that because you cut off again.
I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, meaning you cut off, meaning your audio went off. So we're going to work with it. We'll work with it. And so she stayed home for 7 years. And now, that, like I told her, the kids are old enough to wipe their own ass, you know. So she ended up got a job. It fell on her lap, and she works from home. So,
yeah, man, that's cool. I keep telling my kids are 14 and 11 now, and I worked with my husband for 15 years straight. We remodeling everything. You know, I learned to do plumbing and painting and carpentry, and that was our business. So we remodeling. I can, you know, go. What do you call it? Toe for toe with my husband. That's kind of what my upbringing was, to learn those traits. And so the past couple of years, I've taken a back seat, not worked on any projects majorly, and devoted myself to just being at home all the time. And that's part of our main parenting thing, is that somebody needs to be home. And I keep wanting to say, now that they are older, I want to go back and have a career. I want to do this. I want to do that. But I'm also at the same boat. My husband's going to retire, you know, and he wants to retire soon, like in his 50s. So, like, I want to be able to enjoy that. And plus, he's doing other things that we're pursuing our dreams and goals. And I want to, because you got to be supportive of your spouse's goals, you know. And he wants to pursue his bodybuilding dreams and you know, being an advocate for children and things like that. So we both want to do the same thing. So once our kids are in college, I think we've devoted, that's kind of where we want to, our social media platforms, is that's where we want to take his positivity to help children. And hopefully something bigger comes out of this, and we can do something for children in the future.
That's good. So. That's real. That's a good. That's you have a goal set in place, and you have that's amazing. Like with me, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing after this. I mean, my buddy's like, "What are you gonna do when you retire? You're into photography. You can take photos. Your podcast, dude. I don't even get paid for the podcast, man. I pretty much beg guests to be on my podcast."
Well, we're gonna change that, my man. We're gonna change all of that. You know, this is going to be bigger than the both of us. We're just at the beginning of the stages.
So Marlena did sign for a 5-episode contract, so she will be.
yeah, for sure.
So, so how did you meet your husband?
So, funny story is I was working for this. I was working enrolling Medicaid and Medicare, right? And I was working at this call center in Austin, and it was a long drive back home every day through traffic. So there was this girl that I started working with, and so we take smoke breaks, and then it led to, hey, you don't want to have to wait an hour in traffic, do you want to come over and hang out at my house? So she and I became friends. Well, she was living with her cousin, and her cousin had a really good looking friend, and one day I was like, whoa, I was like, that guy's got nice arms. And she goes, dude, you should tell him, like, you should just totally tell him. And I was like, no, I'm not that kind of person. She's like, she called him out. So she was like, hey, come out here. And Jeff comes out, my husband comes out, and she's like, so Marlena thinks you have really nice arms. And he was like, yeah.
Oh, wow, showing him off.
Working out. And then I was like, can I have your number? And he was like, yeah, you can have my number. We exchanged numbers. And it kind of goes like this. So I met him like in December. We kind of like exchanged numbers. But in March 1st, I texted him, and I was like, hey, you doing anything? He's like, nah. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, do you want to go watch a movie? And he was like, yeah, come over. So March 1st was our first date. We got married March 28th.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, we did.
It's funny. I had a guest on my podcast twice. And sometimes my brother-in-law, Officer Ricky, once you start listening to the podcast, you know who Officer Ricky is. We were both talking to her, and she said pretty much the same thing. She only knew this guy for a few weeks, and they got married and moved to the East Coast.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they're still together. So that's good. That's cool.
And that's where our story is. We are still together. It's 16 years, but those 16 years didn't come super easy. You know, obviously, like I've said sometimes that we see love like the movies. Sometimes it happens super fast, or sometimes it happens super slow. And when people ask, do you believe in love at first sight? I always say yes. And like, you know, that show Love is Blind or Married at First Sight on Netflix.
Right.
Like I see that and I'm like, dude, that's possible because it happened for me. And it happened for me in a way that sometimes it's hard for me to explain it because like, how did you know? And I was like, dude, it just was like that. Like sometimes we get mistaken for being siblings because we're just that cool.
Yeah.
Like we're on, like we're just.
Well, when you get a chance, listen to episode 10 of my podcast. My wife hated me.
I'm going to go back and listen.
She hated me. So, and then, so you said your kids are 14 and I forgot the other one.
11. Yeah.
So 3 year, what, 3 year gap?
Yeah. And my mom told me I was pregnant with my son. She was like, I had no idea. Like I didn't have no intuition, like female intuition. Nope, that wasn't me. People were like, oh, you know. Nope, that wasn't me. My mom's like, you can't eat shrimp. You're pregnant.
What?
And then with my daughter, my husband was like, you're being a little bitchy. And I'm going, and he's like, I bet you're pregnant. He's like, I'm going to go get you a pregnancy test. And I was like, no, you're not. And he goes, you're going to owe me an apology if you come back and you're pregnant. And then sure enough, he got me like pregnancy tests and I went and took them. And even my son was already like two and he was like, baby sister. And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm pregnant. And he was like, I told you.
That's cool. Yeah. The boys are sick. Their boys are 18 months apart. And so pretty much every 6 months, there's a birthday party.
Oh, man, that's got to be hard on the pocket.
No, well, you know what? Now that the wife's working, since I cover the bills, she pretty much, they need shoes, they need clothes, they need...
That's awesome.
They parties if they want something for barbecue, whatever. The wife pretty much is like, if my bank account is empty, you're paying for everything else. And no, she does. The boys needed shoes, and she went and bought the shoes. She, do you need shoes? You want pairs of shoes? I'll get you shoes too. I'm like, I'll take those. Yeah. So yeah, no, because I pay most of the bills to house. So she just recently said, let me help you out, and I'll take over the cell phone bills. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Oh my God, that's what it's about, is compromising in a partnership, is understanding where you need that help and not fighting about it, because I think oftentimes couples want to fight about it. And if you can find that agreement, you're like, it's all going to the same place. It's all benefiting us as the family. And once you get on that level, I think you really strike a true partnership. And that's amazing. That's great.
So she, like I told you earlier on the phone when we were talking before we started recording, she pretty much is raising three kids, you know, the boys and me. So she's molding me into the person that I'm supposed to be. Do I still have triggers? Yeah. Do I get upset for something that I should just let go? Yeah, but you know, it's how, depends on how extreme the trigger is. You know, I've come in the garage in the past and I've punched the garage door just to let my frustrations out because of certain trigger. And she stood here and was not afraid of me freaking raging in the garage. And I was like, damn, this girl ain't going anywhere. Fuck.
That's what it takes. That's what it takes, is somebody being able to love you through the ugly and allow you to heal through that broken so that you come out on the other side a better you, the better version of you. Because every day we grow, right? Every day we're growing, learning. And that's what's beautiful about a partnership. If it's for your partner, just like with my husband, and you'll learn as we go through this podcast, as we go through my story and journey, that, you know, there's some things that my husband loved me through some ugly, like some really, really ugly, and where he just wrapped his arms around me and was like, no, I love you. Because all of my life, I've kind of been in that situation where nobody loves me. I'm not wanted. nobody cares about me. And being able to see that with my husband, we were married quickly, but it took some time. And if you find that, you have to embrace that, but also know that that other person who's given you that love might also have some damages and some trauma that you have to reciprocate that as well and learn to give them that same type of love, that same type of space, and that same type of healing. So that's what's great about a partnership like that. So that's remarkable that you found that, because not very many had that.
Yeah, well, I mean, believe it or not, you're looking at a person that actually was on probation one time. And so I had anger management classes, and then I had parenting classes. And when at the end of my probation officer was like, look, man, after reviewing your case and talking to your therapist and your counselors and everything, he's like, in reality, bro, all you ever needed or wanted was a hug. And he's like, I'm not going to give it to you, so get the fuck out of my office and good luck in your life. Pretty much my exit.
Yeah, but it tells you is to start taking notice of the people and the support system you have around you, because oftentimes we tend to push those people away. And those are the people that really bring value to our lives. Those people that have been being consistent, and we just don't recognize it because we're so used to being hurt that we don't recognize that that's really love. That's really compassion. Showing me they really care. So that moment, you know, that's a big learning moment, you know what I mean?
And now that I found that person that to give me those hugs, sometimes I don't know what to do with them, you know, like, you know, remember the movie Talladega Nights, where Homer was like, I don't know what to do with my hands? Same idea. My kids try to give me a hug, or they want to snuggle and cuddle, and I'm like, I don't know, man.
You know, and that's finding your love language. Like, I know that my love language is touch. And as we go through this process, we spoke about what had happened. But, you know, like, my love language is touch. And
my wife, too.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I want to be mad and angry. And, as you know, you heard that joke, when your wife's mad, put a cape, and then she'll be super mad. Have you ever heard that joke?
I think so.
Okay, there's like this silly like a meme that's like, if your wife's ever being mad, put on a cape and then she'll be super mad.
Oh, super mad.
Yeah, so that it'd just be like, make her giggle. And I always laugh because you don't put a cape on me when I'm super mad. My husband says, I don't care because I love you anyway. And that's like, basically like, it doesn't matter what you're going to say, what comes out of that raunchy mouth of yours, I'm still going to love you. And it doesn't matter. You do it tomorrow or 2 days from now, if you want to be quiet and keep giving me the silent treatment, I still love you anyway.
Yeah.
And that's like, hey, dude, isn't that crazy?
No, I tell my wife, I love you, babe, but you scare me once it looks like you have a stick up your, I'm fucking scared. I'm scared.
I follow you, dude. I can get pretty tasty sometimes. And he's like, you just have to walk away. And I'm like, yeah. Let me just go to the garage and sing for a second. I'll be back a new person.
That's right. You do. You sing, right? I saw you playing with the guitar.
Yeah.
On one of your videos or one of your lives?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to figure out what to do in my lives because I found, like, you know, every time I try to talk about football, a lot of other people come in. And then you get people on the – so TikTok has turned into something weird. I thought it was, like, a social community where, like, you can talk and have fun. But I think there's a lot of, and I'm going to say it, perverted people on there now. So a lot of my lives have turned really perverse. And when that happens, I turn it off. Like, I don't want people asking me about my feet or let me see what socks you're wearing or what's the fit for today just so they can see a crotch shot. That's just not cool.
And I noticed that when your kids were about to enter the room, you stopped your live.
Yeah, I don't want them. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want anybody seeing. So at first when I started it, I was like, oh, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to show my kids and stuff like that. Now, my Instagram and Facebook, if you've gone that far and you're following me on those pages, then you kind of, my history's on there. That's my journey. It's been my journey. So you might find a picture or a video or two of them. But if you're going that far, I hope that you're following me for a different reason, you know?
Yeah.
Not stalking me.
when you posted a video on TikTok and you said your information to Instagram and Facebook were going to be on, you were sharing that information. I'm like, you know what? I did already ask her to come on the podcast. She did agree. So I don't think she won't mind if I go and add her on Instagram and Facebook. But I follow that same thing. I don't like to show my family on TikTok because TikTok, I use it for the for promoting purposes, where I don't care what random person I'm adding. If they make it to my Facebook, and only Facebook, or some people do get Instagram, if they make it to those platforms, like you said, it's because I've developed a little bit of a friendship where I know they're not weirdos, and obviously they're going to come on the podcast as well. So I'll add them. And but yeah, I don't like to short, because that's not what the tick, my purpose for the TikTok was not to be sharing. Pretty much, it wasn't meant to share the family. It was just to share and promote the podcast, and to obviously gain. When I ran out of friends, then I started using TikTok friends to come on the podcast.
And for me, I started off, obviously it starts off like anybody else, just a regular person, right? You start off with the social media accounts. And then I wanted to share a story because I do have alopecia, and that a lot of, as you go along in my journey, I talked about my story. You find out that alopecia gave me a lot of depression and anxiety. I was made fun of by like family members for losing my hair. And I even made up stories like, oh, I have cancer, just to be mean to them, to be spiteful. And we're going to learn a lot about who I was, because they were hurting me. And to get back at them, I was like, yeah, I have cancer. And it was like my uncle calling me out. So for like 18 years, I hid from friends and family. I didn't have social media platforms. But then I realized, I mean, Jada Pinkett came out, right? And all that stuff happened. And I was like, dude, I've got a voice, and I'm going to use that voice. And I started off with alopecia. Then I realized that I'm growing to something better than that. It's not just my alopecia, that I'm using my platform to pull myself out of depression. Like, a year ago, I was thinking suicide. A year ago, I was like, I shaved my head completely.
I saw a photo that you shared. I'm like, wait a minute. Is this an old photo? Did she just do that today? But right? Then I realized that it was an old photo.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, actually. So I shaved my head, and I was like, I'm starting over, starting with a clean slate. I talked to my husband about getting on medication, going to see my doctor, talking to somebody, because it was really dragging me out. Like, not as you go with my story, you'll find out that I let a lot of that suck me in, and it took me 20 years to kind of let go of that, and to be a better person, to see the person that I am now, the smiley, bubbly person that's wants to create joy for other people. I want to share my story with people because I know I came from a very dark place, and I am at a way better place now.
People to this day would tell me that, like, after listening to my podcast or hearing my stories, they say that because I'm, for most part, 80% of the time, I'm always in a good mood, that they don't see that. So they're like, what the hell? You try to do what? Like, I was talking to a friend of mine. She's actually my mother's comadre. I was talking to her yesterday because I was going through my contact list, and I'm like, whose number am I deleting? I don't need to have it anymore. I'm like, let me see how she's doing. And I started talking to her about stuff that happened from 2010, and she was like, she got mad at me. She was, you were homeless and you didn't come to my house? I'm like, it was only for a month, I swear. She goes, you could have called me and I would have gave you somewhere to stay. I'm like, honestly, when you're going through bullshit, you don't think about that. I don't want to be anyone's burden. And she was like, no, she lectured me. I'm like, okay, this is like 13 years ago.
yeah, it's hard to hear it now though, right? Because as a person, we don't often ask for help. Because we, as Latinos, we don't ask for help. Because that's it. Like, again, this is where it's all going to start. It's the environment we were raised in. And that's breaking generational curses. And that's what I'm about today. Is because if people see me like at the pickup line or like the volunteer, and they're like, oh my God, Marlena. And I get all of this joy from people, and I give a lot of my joy to people, but they don't know how broken I really am inside. And like,
same here.
And I'm like, and it's so hard for me because it takes a lot. They're like, I haven't seen you in a while, or why aren't you smiling? Because it takes so much for me to give you that joy that I forget about myself. And that's where I was last year.
Yeah, now what, say that again.
Now I know how to balance.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, last year for my birthday, everyone was asking my wife, what are we going to do for Andy? It's a milestone. He hit 40. What are we doing? He doesn't want anything. And so I know I probably offended someone, because only my brother-in-law came over to the house because he wasn't taking no for an answer. Fucking police. And he came over, and so I had, you know, the next morning I sent everybody a text message. Look, guys, I don't like to celebrate my birthday because – this was an event. This is a day that for a long time I wished I was never born. So it's one of those days where it's like a hit and miss. One year I can be like, let's go freaking barbecue, let's go to Vegas, let's whatever. And then there's the funk, you get in a funk. And I don't want to do anything for my birthday. I don't want anyone here. I'm sorry. Oh, come on, it's your 40th. I don't want anyone here. And no matter what excuse I gave Officer Ricky, so I'm like, dude, look, I got to go pick up my kids. By the time I get home, it won't be till like 4 o'clock. Then I start dinner. Dinner won't be ready till 5 o'clock. And then I got to go to bed by like 7. It's pointless, bro. What did he do? He picked up my kids and he was here grilling food.
Wellness check.
Pretty much, right?
Well, that's good that you had that. I was the only kid, so I had no siblings. I didn't have anybody to check in on me.
Yeah.
We'll get into the story about my mom. I love my mom dearly. She's my best friend, but she shouldn't have been my best friend. She should have been my mom.
Well,
I've never had a birthday party.
Really? Well,
38, never had a birthday party.
Well, we've been chatting for about 25 minutes, so let's start with chapter one.
Let's go. Well, okay. So often, sometimes we don't say anything, right? Because we fear to offend, right? Sometimes we fear the consequences, right?
Right.
All right. And before I can even continue telling you the story of how I actually survived, I'm going to give you a little bit more unique look into my past.
Go for it. Okay? The mic's all yours.
Most of my life that we're going to talk about, I haven't really said anything before, not allowed to, like, my mom. My husband hasn't heard my story entirely. My children certainly have never heard these words. So I'm hoping that whatever you hear today through this podcast, through my words, through this program, that and from my honesty, that you take something away from it, and that it's something we can grow and learn from in the future.
Right.
So I was born back in 84. I'm 38 years old. I have a birthday coming up. My birthday is in March.
Nice.
I was born in a little bitty town, Brady, Texas. So this town's mostly known as a geographical location, as the heart of Texas, actually.
Okay.
So look it up on the map. You point your finger down the middle of the map. Brady's right there. It's where all the highways, like big highways in Texas, meet. 87, 283, 190. They all intersect in Brady. It's about 2 hours from Austin. And the biggest thing it's known for is the goat cook-off. It's like the hugest event there. And that little town of 5,000 grows by like 2,000 plus people every year.
Okay.
So they grill goat. They smoke somewhere upwards of like 5,000 pounds of goat each year.
Wow.
At this place. So it's like this huge festival. So they have barbecue and it's like 3 days of drinking. And like, that's the biggest thing they're known for. So it's called the World Championship Goat Cook-Off. So, like, that's what you did on Labor Day weekend was, are you going to go to the goat cook-off? And the whole town was, like, planning. They plan all year long for this thing. You get RVs out there. They've got crafts out there. And the local people start, like, Thursday night.
Wow.
The festival don't start till Saturday, but they're there Thursday night setting up. And they're all, what do they say? The bestiándose. That's what they call it, right? Yeah, so Brownwood would argue that they're the heart, but Brady has always claimed the heart. But anyway, the barbecue's pretty good there. The spirits are always flowing. There's always drinking. There's always a party somewhere on the weekend, especially when I was growing up. But there's also a lot of drugs in Brady.
Ooh.
So, like, by, like, 14 years old, you're probably driving up and down the street with somebody in high school drinking a beer. Or you're going out to the lake trying to find a spot. The most popular spot there was called the Slab, and it was like literally a concrete slab out of the lake. And like all the kids would hang out. If you were 14 and 15 and hanging out with the older kids, you were in that group. You know, smoking cigarettes, dancing on the picnic tables. That's kind of all the kids had in Brady.
Right.
And it's sad because I think that's kind of still how it is now. Like a lot of the kids back there kind of still do the same thing. So that's kind of like what it was. They looked forward to Friday night football. And that's where my love of football came. Friday night football was the thing. We used to line up the Bridge Street, all the cars, everybody in Brady would line up. And, see off all the guys going on the football games. So from very little, I knew I wanted to either be a cheerleader or I wanted to be in the band, like, for sure. And as I got older and started playing with my, like, my cousins, definitely I wanted to play football. Like, ever in the streets playing football.
Well, this is why the wife hates football, because, well, she used to hate football, was because she was in the band. She's like, we're playing music for a game, a team that can't win for shit.
And we weren't very good ourselves either. I mean, not at the time. We were pretty bad. We were a 3A school, but I loved the band. Like, and I got my saxophone in the sixth grade. My cousin was the drum major. So from early on, I was learning right flank, left flank, you know, traverse. And it was pretty cool because I learned it, and I learned to pick up a music. I learned music, and that's where my love of music came from.
Gotcha.
Part of me too, you know, football and music. So yeah, the only thing that you were doing was either going to hang up at the Sonic or the Dairy Queen. If you were Who's, you're probably up at the Sonic, and you're probably blaring with somebody, you know, with the boom, 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 boom. And that's probably where you found most of the people these days, was there. Or we'd, here's one joke. We used to have, like, the thing to drink was, remember Strawberry Boone's Farm?
That's got to be a Texas thing.
Okay, so there is this drink called Strawberry Boone's Farm, and I guess if you're from Texas, it's an alcoholic drink, and you kind of get it like a wine bottle, and it's like super cheap. I think it was like $6 or something, and we could all get drunk off of it. Like, even one time, my friends put some sparkling peach cider into one of them and gave it to the girl, and the girl pretended she was drunk. It was like some, but anyways, we'd grab our Boone's drink, and we'd go get drunk. Like, that was the thing to do. I mean, that's kind of what Brady was. But we're a rebellious small town, you know? That's kind of was the norm. We stayed out when the lights, you know, when the street lights came on.
Yeah.
We came home when we were supposed to. We didn't have cell phones, so when we were told to be somewhere, we were going to be there. I definitely never stayed out later than 12 because my grandmother always said, you know, you stay out late, you're staying out there. Like, you're sleeping out.
Oh, shit.
So, like, so that's kind of how we grew up. So, also, that being said, my grandma was really strict, and she raised me, right? So, she was seven generations Texas. So, she was all about Texas. Like, she was there for me. She would always tell us that how she came to be in Texas. You know, my grandfather came from Spain. And, you know, I was born and raised in Brady. I'm going to die in Brady. I'm never going to leave Brady. So she was in church, Brady. So I was with her by her side all the time. So going out, that's kind of what they did there in Brady. Me, my cousins wouldn't take me so much because I would get in trouble. Like, if we take Marlena, we're going to get in trouble. She's going to get in trouble. So that was one thing that some of my cousins guarded me in that respect, that you can't have me because, you know, grandma would get upset. I had to be at church. You know, I couldn't stay out late. And all those things applied to, it seems like, just me. But so I never got to go and experience hanging out with all those people. So I was kind of like, when I did, it was like, oh, what is she doing here?
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh, like, grandma's the preacher, you know, yeah. That sort of thing. So it was kind of like, were they really themselves when they were around me then? I don't know. But over that, I never really got to know, like, that aspect of growing up and having those types of friends. So, and that's, like I said, that's a big part of growing up and where we were at. I was always told to, you know, help my grandma out, respect my grandma, respect my elders. And so I never wanted to do anything that would make my grandmother upset with me, right, or in her eyes, not want me around, especially because she was the one raising me. My mom, from a very early on, after I was born, kind of like just worked all the time. She met my dad very early, and it was a whirlwind of a kind of a romance. They only knew each other for a very short period of time. In Brady, everybody knows each other. So they knew the family, obviously, but didn't know each other. And as an adult now, I can recognize where mental trauma or mental health was important but wasn't spoken back in the days, you know, 30 years ago, you know, 40 years ago. It's not something that everybody talks about. Alcoholism isn't talked about. Drug abuse isn't talked about. All those things obviously were heavy in the community, you know, in the 80s.
Right.
I'm talking about them being present in the 90s. You can imagine what the 70s and 80s were like in that, in, you know, then. So they had a whirlwind of a marriage, I mean, of a romance. And when she was pregnant, he was gone. You know, I heard different stories that he was abusive, that he'd used all my mom's money for things, like all her hard-earned money. And she worked several jobs. She was not only providing for herself, but she also lived with my grandmother. Her youngest of sibling was there. She's one of 10. So she was still at that age providing, helping my grandmother and then helping the youngest, which was only a year older than I was.
Right.
So doing all of this, she was still very much there, but always gone, always working. So left me in my care of my grandmother all the time. From a very, like, I'm talking about from when I was born. So that being said, they didn't talk about it. He was ran out of town and I never saw him again. I never heard from him again. And I guess I didn't want to. I guess I didn't have a need to at that point.
Yeah, I never knew my father. And the last memory I have of him was my mother picking me up from his house. And I can still tell you to this day. And I was like 2 years old. I can still tell you to this day where the house is at. And I never went back. I never went back to that house. Even as after I left the house, after I grew up, became an adult, I never went to the house. I don't know why. Maybe I was afraid or scared. So one day I reached out to my grandma and I said, "Hey, I think I'm going to start looking for my dad." And she's the one that put a stop to it. And she told me, "Hold on." Turned out to be that the guy I was looking for, that I was going to go look for, wasn't my dad. So I gave up before I even started.
Yeah, and I went on that pursuit and that journey looking for him. Like, I didn't know much about it. Like, I was told all these different things growing up. Like, I was even told that one time he showed up to her place of employment and, like, brought a whole jar of pennies. And was like, "This should be enough." And like, whoa. The owner of the restaurant where she was working kicked him out of the restaurant. And I believe, like, and I was told, and I don't want to say I made it up, but so over so many years, and I don't know what's true anymore because the lines have blurred. Like, I believe there was a restraining order put on him, which deterred him even more from coming to Brady. I mean, he only ended up, and I know where he's at. Like, I know who he is. And I've reached out. Well, as we go along, I didn't try to reach out to him. I would write letters to somebody I imagined my father would be. So I would write these letters to my dad and put him in a box.
Wow.
I'm be this knight in shining armor that he was just going to come and take care of me. You know, I was going to see him. And, you know, when I learned to write about 7 or 8 years old, but that's when I started writing letters to him and putting them in a box and hiding them. So, but yeah, my mom, around 7 years old. So let's get back. So, like, you know, we're talking about Brady and where I grew up and about mental health and stuff like that, not knowing my dad. And he was run out of town. And of course, my mom did the most she could with what she had. So she raised me. She had to work, obviously, multiple jobs, whether that was, you know, cleaning hotel rooms with my grandmother, cleaning houses, restaurants, waitressing. She did it all. When I was about 7 years old, she ended up meeting somebody at one of the restaurants she was working at. And you know how, like, whenever you meet somebody for the first time, and like me and my husband, it was everything I wanted, you know, all I ever, it's like you put all your effort into it 100%, right?
Right.
So at that time when she met somebody at 7, she did exactly that. She, you know, put all her time and energy into him. So around 7 or 8 years old, I remember just waiting for her, waiting up for nights. Like, I'd see her in the morning and I'd be so excited to share with her about my day, but she'd have to go to work, right? So I never got to talk to her. She was gone. So like the little things in, as growing up, I didn't get to have those moments with her. Like I remember one time learning how to make a French braid on My Little Pony and being so excited to tell her, but she never came home that night to tell her. And it wasn't that she was being ugly or not wanting to be there. She was spending her time trying to create something with somebody else to be a family, you know?
Yeah.
As an adult, I recognize that now. As a child, I felt abandoned. I felt not wanted.
Sucks.
Yeah, so like there would be times where like I'd wait up and I'd, you know, expect for her to be there and she wasn't there. And nights I'd spend crying and then my grandmother having to console me, you know, well, she's working or she's going to be back. Those things like really affected me. And I always wanted somebody, so I found myself writing to somebody. And I saw everybody else had a dad, and I didn't have a dad, and I wanted to write to my dad. And I knew that's what my mom was doing, was trying to get me a dad. Which kind of seems, you know, as a child, to have that kind of mentality, in hindsight, is like, wow, that was at a different level, right? I'm like, I want my mom to be happy. And that's kind of where my mindset was, even at a very young age, is I know I didn't have my dad. I know she was working very hard to provide for my grandmother and her youngest of siblings and have this house. Like, she was making it for herself. She had a car, a little house for us. We were doing pretty well.
Right.
So, yeah. But doing that, I wasn't involved with anything with her and the new boyfriend. Like, holidays weren't spent with me. They were spent, you know, with his family, and I wasn't there. So like birthdays, I mentioned earlier, I think the last birthday party I really remember is when I was in pre-kindergarten and my mom threw a huge birthday party with like a piñata and everything. And all my little friends were there. And that was like the last birthday party because now, I mean, after that was about 7 or 8 years old because then every after that, it was a gift.
Oh, wow.
No birthday party. And which I think like now my kids, I raise them and we kind of have a quaint little birthday party. I always tell them, do you want to invite friends? And they're like, no, mom, just us, just family. You're like, I never even had that.
Yeah, I know there came a point, like I also lived with my grandma for a few years, and she pretty much tapped out with piñatas after you hit 10. 10, you're done. No more piñatas.
Yeah, no more piñatas. But, you know, even just not even having your cousins around, you know, like, and we were all there in town. Like, we were all raised in the same town. It wasn't like we were just there. Like, our entire family existed in the town.
Right.
So we never had, like, a big gathering. Like, you imagine, you know, somebody's first birthday party, you invite the whole family, right? That never took place for me.
Yeah, my son turned 14 this month, and he, what do you want? And he, I guess the options were a party, Universal Studios, or Big Bear, and he chose Big Bear. So we came back. His birthday was actually on a Monday, and all we did was have cake at the house. The family came over, and since I had to work the next day at 7 o'clock, good night, and I went to bed.
Yeah, my son's birthday is actually on Tuesday, and we asked him what he wanted, and he's been wanting the PlayStation 5. So, like, we try not to do anything, like, too major, but if it's, like, a major gift, like, that's, like, a whole birthday party included.
Yeah, there's no need for a birthday. Just give them the PlayStation. You're good.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we – and that's how we've been, like, these – well, since my kids, for the past 14 years, that's how we've had them.
Right.
It's, like, them the option, and they – oh, my God. I'm going to brag a little bit on my kids because they're so responsible with it. Like, people always compliment, how did you do that? I'm like, dude – it's like, I just try to do all the things that, you know,
yeah.
Like try to do them as best I can. And I think reverse psychology played a big role because like give them too much of something and they don't want it.
Right.
It's like phone thing. Like they've always had a cell phone and people are like, how come your kids aren't always on their phones? And they both have iPhones and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, because they were like, I raised them on it. Like it's nothing to them. It's just like another, like putting on a shoe.
Yeah,
like you don't use there all day. You're wearing it until you take it off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how my kids are. They're like, "How did you do that?" I was like, "Luck."
Right.
But yeah, for sure. That's how it was. Mom put all her effort into somebody else, and I was left wanting something. And for a long time, I was looking for that and chasing that in all of the wrong places, and not recognizing what love was, not recognizing what genuine affection was, And there's a lot of things that we don't talk about growing up. There's, or your parents don't tell you, especially when your grandmother's raising you, y'all don't talk about a lot. Like, you don't talk about, like, I remember, and we'll talk about it, getting my period, I thought I was dying. I was outside playing with all the boys on the bikes. You know, you have a boy's bike with a bar across it. And we were playing cops and robbers and out in the streets, you know. And I remember slamming my brake on and hitting that bar really hard. And then feeling like I had to pee. And I run inside and I'm crying, screaming at the door, grabbing myself, and I'm bleeding. And I'm yelling, "Grandma, grandma, me estoy muriendo." She's like, "What's going on?" And her friend from church was there. And she's like, "What's going on?" And I was like, I'm dying. Well, after a good laugh and my mom showing up later to explain to me that she just become a woman, that I wasn't dying, that it was actually my period. And everybody got a good chuckle out of it. But those are the things we didn't talk about.
Right.
And now we talk about all of those things with my daughter. Like, that's our part of big parenting, is being honest and open. And having those conversations, because those are the things we didn't talk about when we were little. Like, that, like having your own space and having your own bubble. Which all were big things that I didn't know, which led to some pretty crappy things happening to me as I grew up.
Yeah. Ouch.
So, but yeah, I didn't really want to know who my dad was. I just kind of like created this fictional character in myself, or believing who he was. So that being said, you know, it was hard. It was hard not feeling love from anywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I know what you're talking about. I feel the same way, because I grew up with, you know, I lived with my mom, and she, you know, she was there, but at the same time, she wasn't there. And, you know, she was diagnosed, in the early 90s, diagnosed borderline 5150. So her mind is of a 15-year-old. You know, so she's a kid herself. She can be pushing 60, but she, in reality, her mind is of a 15-year-old.
Oh, wow.
And so I didn't feel like I was loved. I didn't feel like she loved me at all. And just this past August, I actually cut her off. I actually told her, "Hey, man, if I am the cause of your stress, then there's no need for me to be around." And I cut her off. And because, like I said, I never really even felt loved. I think it was in my 20s, and I was in tears one day asking her, "What did I do to you as a child for you to hate me so much? You know, all you ever wanted was your mother's love, and you're not going to get it. You're not going to get it. So there's a point in life where you tap out." And I finally tapped out at 40. At 40!
Oh, I feel you, you know, like, and that's what I mentioned. At a young age, I even recognized that my mom needed to be loved, and I wanted her to be loved and be happy. So her, you know, spending her time with this man was like, she's trying, I want her to be happy. If this brings happiness and joy to her, I want her to have that. I think I've always had that, because I've always been told I have a lot of love to give people. And that brings me to, you know, my next point. About where I was always chasing love. So, like, I was raised with my uncles. You know, I always was around that, looking for that father figure. My grandfather taught me a lot about plumbing. My uncle taught me a lot about electrical work in cars. Another uncle taught me about carpentry. So I learned all those traits, painting. There was never really a woman in my life except for my grandmother. So, you know, being a girly or frilly was never in my vocabulary. Like, Pentecostal, you were where... torn to wear, you know, a certain way. I wasn't allowed to wear makeup by her, or like wear short skirts or anything like that. It was always very modest. So that's how I was brought up. So I was out there rough and tough and with the guys, you know, rolling around, you know.
We had completely opposite lives. You're learning to do man stuff. Well, I'm learning to, well, no offense to ladies out there nowadays, everybody can do it. I'm just saying, back when we were kids, that was a man's world. While me at 8 years old am learning how to make pancakes, I'm learning how to make food, how to feed my siblings, how to cook rice, how to, you know, because half the time she wasn't there. There was a new guy in her life, and poof, you know, one day she took off and they were gone all day. And I'm like, what am I going to do? We're hungry. There's no food in the refrigerator. I learned how to cook rice. That's all I had. And And I find out the next day that while we were at home starving, she was at Universal Studios. Because like you said, she's giving her new relationship all the attention, but you have about 8 responsibilities at home. And so I learned to cook. I mean, like, till this day, I mean, I think I make the greatest pancakes because I've been doing them since 8 years old.
That's hilarious. See, and that's, my grandmother wouldn't let anybody in her kitchen. So she didn't, it wasn't until I was married that I called and be like, Grandma, how do you make tortillas? You know, she gave me was like, it's 4 handfuls of mine, un tacito de agua, you know, and I'm like, Grandma, that does not translate. But it was quite opposite because go work with, you know, anda trabaja con tu tío, or go give him a help. He needs help. Go dig that ditch, or your uncle needs help, Rufy, go help him. I was never in the kitchen. I didn't learn any of that. I mean, I knew about being in the kitchen, but my grandmother didn't allow, just period, anybody in her kitchen. So, you know, and I regret a lot of that because now that she's passed, I don't know. I know some of the recipes, and man, I can nail Thanksgiving dinner and those tortillas, but a lot of other stuff like her carne guisada and her arroz con, you know, all of that. Like, I wish I really knew because I never took the time.
It's got to be a Hispanic thing because when I'm in the kitchen, I want nobody in there. So the moment, for the listeners out there, Marlena and I spoke on the phone for about 45 minutes and we were talking. So I told her I can be ready in about an hour because I'm going to make breakfast for the family. After we hung up, my wife started making leftovers for herself. She didn't want breakfast because she's like, let's finish the leftovers. But get out of the kitchen, dude. Like, let me start breakfast. So I was actually a little bit late today because I started making breakfast later. I already had the French toast prep, but the wife was taking over the stove. I'm like, dude, get out of the kitchen.
That's how we are too, like supper time, because my husband's a fitness junkie, so he's got certain meals, so like he preps all his food. He's like, I don't want you to cook because you're gonna be like throwing some carne guisada or some, like, you know, picadillo tortillas. He's like, I can't be having all that stuff. He's like, so, but we're in there together. I'm like, I can't be lapsing over him, because I'm like, either you're going to cook or I'm going to cook.
Does he have his own refrigerator like Shakira or no?
There's one at the garage.
There is.
But I don't say it specifically for him. We have like a mini fridge in the game room and then the one in there. But he's got water everywhere and he does have food. But the thing is that I've been completely submissive in the grocery store to just allowing him. He just gets whatever he needs on his grocery list. And we do suffice. My daughter's a picky eater, so, like, I just get the things she needs. My son is in bodybuilding with them. So, like, they eat the same stuff, like, the same consistent meal of chicken, rice, and whatever they're eating.
Yeah.
So, like, I just kind of conform. It used to be, like, where I did have everything, and, like, I was cooking 3 different meals a day, and he was doing his thing, and we had everything separate. And then I'm just like, you know what? Lord, take the wheel. Hopefully I just wait in the process.
Well, I mean, it seems like so far you've only touched on a one event of your upbringing, and you gave me multiple examples earlier, but it seems like you learned from this, and it gave you a good head on your shoulders, you know, because you're talking to me with a smile on your face 24/7. And, you know, go ahead. It looks like you wanted to say something.
Well, that's kind of where I was so glad that you kind of said that, dude, because when people ask me when I tell my story, they're like, because we'll get into it. I was raped and molested. When I tell that story, I'm not crying and I'm not upset and I'm telling it with confidence. And people ask me, how can you tell it with confidence? How can you be so confident? How can you have faith still? I listened to my upbringing. My grandmother was the most important, influential person in my life. And the key here is to listen to your elders. Take the advice that we don't want to take because we think it's nonsense. Listen to the advice and take heed to the word. I'm not saying you to get all religious on you or anything like that, but listen to what your grandmother's saying. She knows. She's lived sometime. Listen to those people surrounding you that truly know and love you. Sometimes their word, like, even just that moment of not wanting to make somebody, like, I never wanted my grandmother or my mom. I never wanted to do something to be have offense in their eyes or to make them be offended of me or embarrassed of me or humiliated of me. I never wanted to do that to them. So I lived my life in that way. And how can I be a smile still on my face? Because I learned that those moments, they happened, but I cannot let it control who I want to be in the future and what I want my children to learn. If I continue to live in that darkness and dwell on all of those things, I was raped and become the victim of my past, I am never going to have this bright future that I got a taste of in my dream. And that's what I want to strive for, because I know that my purpose on this earth is much bigger than what my story is.
And that's what, with in my case, I didn't have, you know, my grandma didn't live here. My grandma actually lived in Texas. She was in El Paso. And I spoke to her on the phone once in a while. Like I said, I started listening to her when she sent me a paperwork stating that the guy I was going to go look for wasn't my father. And so I talked to her more, and she's like, look, I have all these court documents, but I never, it's not my job to tell you guys the truth until you guys see it for yourselves. And I mean, and so there's people out there that don't agree with the things I say, either on my podcast or about the family, about my family, like my mother and my siblings. But like I said one day on this podcast, it's like, there's court documents out there. All you have to do is go to the Ventura County Courthouse and you will see the truth, that what I am speaking on this podcast is nothing but facts, because they're there for you to go read and catch up on. And so, you know, when I try to do the same thing with my kids, where I try to talk to them where they understand. Like when my son the other day, no joke, last Sunday, he pulled out his grades and he had an F on one of his classes. And my wife and I ripped him a new one. And in 4 days, that 36% went to a 77. And why? Because I tell them, I didn't go to school and I need you guys to do better than what I went through. So, and at the same time, I use this podcast to tell people what I've been through, so that, you know, they don't feel alone, or if they're going through it before it gets worse, they already know what's gonna happen. And, you know, people have told me, like, dude, we respect you more now than we did yesterday because of your podcast, because of the stories you're sharing. And like I said, I saw your TikToks and I was like, you know what, this person, I something you said is what made me want to reach out and get you on the podcast so you can share your story. I don't remember which episode it, what video it was or whatnot, but I know something, it wasn't just the Cowboys, I know something you said made me want to reach out. And like I said, we use this podcast to share awareness of whatever it is that is bothering us. Like I said, I went to therapy and I had to use therapy because I didn't have elders. Like I said, my grandma, I think I went into a whole circle. My grandma wasn't really there. She was there, but she wasn't really there. So I went to a therapist who then the therapist told me what I needed to do. It's funny because my wife, for the first 3 years of us being together, she would tell me, you need therapy. You need therapy. And the moment my lawyer's like, you need therapy, I went and got a freaking lawyer, a therapist.
Sometimes you have to hear it from somebody else.
Yeah.
Like I told you, sometimes we don't see the love and support that we have immediately right there. We have to hear it from somebody else. And when I say take heed to what your grandparents are doing, I honestly mean learn from other people's mistakes. And just like you mentioned your kids, and I tell my kids, your job at school, your school is your job for now. You don't have to worry about outside environment. You don't have anything else to worry about. I want you to be successful and being there to, I want to help you be successful. So let me support you in whatever it is you got to do. As long as you're doing your work and trying, then you're going to be okay. And they have that. Both my children are on the dean's list. They're both straight A students. They're both just told me last night they both would like to go to University of Texas. In Austin. I was shocked because I thought one wanted to go one way. And to find out last night that they both had their college ambitions, I'm like, I was in tears and proud, because my son was like, Mom, I know I wanted to go to TCU, but I'd really like to go to the University of Texas, Austin. And my daughter was like, I'm going to go, because that's where she wants to go. And she's like, we can live together. And it was just this beautiful moment.
That's funny.
So learning from people's mistakes and teaching that and telling your children an open and honesty And that's my message, is that you have to take take the experiences of others and take which parts apply to you in life and apply those experiences. Even if you cannot relate entirely to the moment, if there's something in their word or in their experience that can help you in the future, just take it. You don't have to think, well, I didn't go through that, that's not going to work for me. It's take something out of it. And that's, if I can share that with somebody, that's walking in my purpose. And I know my purpose is much greater than me just having TikTok and loving the Cowboys. And I know much bigger than that. And if the Cowboys, you know, get me there, that's just my stepping stone. That's God's favorite team. So that's just God pushing me even further to doing what my purpose is. And I'm just going to walk in faith with that, because that's how I was raised. I was raised in faith. I'm not going to let go of that. I may not be walking straight in the Pentecostal church, but I'm walking straight in my faith. And I know there is a God, and I know he exists because he shows me that every single day. And I know that I'm able to get up and smile knowing that all of these traumas, things have happened to me in my life. And I'm still here with my husband. We have a beautiful family. My children are doing amazing. I'm alive.
Yeah.
You know, living my dream. And that might, I might not have, you know, all of the riches and fancies, because I'll also say this message. God's not always going to give you something beautifully wrapped up in a Tiffany's box. A diamond still has to be shined for it to get its luster. And those facets that we have growing up, all those are facets in our diamond. We just got to polish it up and shine it.
Right.
So it's not about trying to redo those facets, because they've already been cut. It's about just shining it up so that we can shine even more. And that's the only way to do that. Is for us to keep learning from our mistakes, keep learning from our experiences, and keep sharing those journeys with other people so that they too can maybe just learn just a little bit more about what their life purpose is. Because they might like, oh, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. But maybe just one thing that I said can be like, wait a second, I'm supposed to be talking to my mom? Okay, let me go talk to my mom. Right. You know, because like you, I shut my mom out like 8 months ago. I was like totally set on shutting her out.
Just about that time, 8 months ago, August.
And I told her and I let her know exactly all these things that we're talking about. I wrote a book about 9 months ago, and I explained all of these things that have been affecting me from growing up and how it made me feel. But I also told her I love her, and that I know that her upbringing wasn't what it should have been. I know that there's things that, I know that, you know, things happened to her in her past. The abuse that she had to witness with her dad and her mom. I know that the abuse that she had with my biological father, the crap that she had to deal with her significant other for 35 years before getting divorced. I saw that. I recognized that. And now I just need to embrace her. And like I tell her, and I tell everybody, you create joy for the world. Create joy for the world you want to create. And for me, that's my husband, my mom, and my kids. That's my world.
And that's, I think, how I ended the conversation with my mother. Because she brought up the fact that her father was abusive, and I ended the conversation with her, and you allowed his, and you took out his abusiveness on us and ended it. That conversation was over. And click, deleted her number, never again.
Well, we're going to work on going that relationship back, because that's where I was 6 months ago, and I was dead set on that, those emotions and those feelings that you have. I even, my grandmother died, and I was like, I lost my mom. And I would even say things like, mom, you're my friend. You're not being my mom.
Yeah.
I can imagine the hurt that she felt, those words coming out of my mouth. Knowing what I know now today, going where I've come from, I've repaired that. So we're going to work on that with you, because we're going to repair that.
We'll talk about that on chapter two.
That's it. Episode.
Well, Marlena, thank you for coming on the podcast. Thank you for taking time this morning to chat before we actually started recording. And, you know, you are welcome to come back on. You obviously owe me 4 more chapters, and you signed a document. And, you know, you're always welcome. Just let me know your schedules. I like to record on the weekends, and the earlier the better, you know. And like I end every podcast, Marlena, thank you for writing with me.
Hey, I appreciate you. And as you know, we're still them boys.
Thank you for listening to Ride With Me, the Flat Tire Indie Podcast. You can also listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean.